a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Hey, Representative from Yankton, and I'm the Democrat leader of the House. I welcome everyone to the weekly Democratic press conference. Really appreciate this nice crowd. We're joined here by students from Washington High School, student journalists, I assume. Very happy to have you with us. Usually we're here with Senator Scott Heidepreem. He's in a very important bill right now, so we'll join me representing the Senate is Senator Ben Nesselhoff of Turner and Clay Counties over at Vermilion, and you'll hear from Ben in a second. Let me just give you a quick rundown of how things have been going in the House, and we'll hear from Ben, and we'll open it to questions. Interesting discussion this week, all week long, it's kind of been percolating through the Capitol about FTEs. And FTEs, anybody who's been around here very long knows that FTE basically means full-time equivalent. The jingle mostly means it's one full-time worker or two part-time workers or ten-time workers. And as we went through the budget process, and we are really, really scrutinizing the budget closer than ever this session for obvious reasons, we've got a huge structural deficit. We've grown state government in the last 7 or 8 years by something like 1,400 FTEs. The population as a whole has not grown very much at all in South Dakota, and yet state government has grown by leaps and bounds. And there's a lot of confusion as we really delve into those figures. First of all, we find out that not all of those FTEs, we have 14,000 total in South Dakota, not all of those FTEs get a paycheck, which is somewhat distressing if you're one of the FTEs, but actually they're not distressed by it because they're actually phantom FTEs. They don't actually exist. We're budgeting money for a state employee, and the departments don't hire anyone. They just take the money and transfer it to something else, maybe to buy desks or computers or supplies or travel or whatever. So we have these phantom FTEs. We don't know how many. Perhaps anywhere from 300, 400, 500, or 600. We're trying to get that figured out. The governor now has agreed that they're not all necessary. Some are natural in the course of running a big operation like this. Some of them are just natural vacancies that occur, you know, in maybe for 6 months or 9 months or a year you're trying to fill a position, so that would be an empty FTE. But some of them are there intentionally, and we really need to put a stop to that. It's bad budgeting, it's probably wasteful spending, and it is something that the Democrat caucus is very concerned about. Then we discovered that now our colleagues on the other side of the aisle want to redefine what an FTE is in some cases. So now, and on one hand, we've got the phantom FTEs. On the other hand, we've got people who are actually drawing a paycheck, and we're paying their Social Security, their workers' comp. They're taking coffee breaks. They're getting paychecks. They report for work. And now we're going to say, no, they're actually not FTEs. So it's getting a little confusing as we delve into the budget. And maybe that little example just gives you an idea of how difficult it is for these part-time citizen legislators on the Appropriations Committee and all of us to really figure out what's going on in this budget. All we really know for sure is that state government has grown beyond its means. It's grown at almost twice the rate of inflation for 7 out of the last 8 years. We've not balanced our budget for most of those years, and we have a real fiscal crisis on our hands. It started well before the recession, and the recession just really hit home hard. So that's where we're at. We've got a lot of balls in the air. We're trying to figure out this FTE thing. We're trying to figure out why we're spending so many one-time funds, even in good times, to balance the budget. We've got a mess. We've also talked a lot this week about all the corporate tax breaks that we're passing out. I wouldn't want to call it corporate welfare because I think the dollars are probably spent pretty well for the most part. We're trying to grow our economy, and many of those tax breaks go to companies like wind energy companies that we're fully supportive of. But how much can a small state afford? That's really the question. Should there be a cap on these kind of tax breaks? Should there be some job numbers attributed to them? One thing that really opened our eyes was the news now that TransCanada, the pipeline that crossed East River, South Dakota this last year, got huge tax breaks for doing that. Clearly, those tax breaks didn't create many, if any, permanent jobs. And certainly TransCanada would have come across with the pipeline regardless of whether they got the tax breaks or not. So those are some of the budget issues that we're trying to deal with. It's complicated stuff. We don't always get the information that we need, but we're working hard, and we'll continue to do so and report to you. Along with the short-term decisions that we have to make some long-term decisions out here. And Senator Scott Heidepreem, as I said, is in a committee right now working on a bill that would create a policy for long-time spending. Senator Ben Nesselhoff is going to report on that and some of the other things on the Senate side. Thank you.
Well, Well, thank you, Bernie. As Representative Hunoff said, I'm Ben Nesselhoff. I'm the state senator from District 17. It's Vermilion, Clay, and Turner counties. I'm also the chairman of the Senate Democrat Caucus. I'm happy to be here filling in for my good friend Scott Heidebrim. I want to take a slight detour away from the budget discussion, something we're not able to do much this year, but I want to talk just about a couple of bills that are of particular interest, a couple of issues dealing with some of the campaign finance reforms that are going on. Also want to talk about the recent Supreme Court decision and the state's response to that. One particular bill that's out there, House Bill 1207, I think is a very important bill. This would finally attempt to, once again, this is a battle we've had for a while, once again bring in line the reporting requirements for political slush funds that exist. The best example we have, of course, one that we've heard about many times in the press, is the Governor's Club, a political action committee that's existed for a number of years unreported. I'm not convinced that we actually have to pass legislation in order to bring that into compliance, but the Secretary of State has decided that transfer from one fund to another counts as an expense. I would disagree. I think if there was a court challenge, the courts would agree with that. But we are once again trying to bring that into line so that the people of South Dakota know how political money is being spent. The other couple of issues came out recently because of the Supreme Court decision allowing corporations to spend unlimited amounts of monies in elections. This has been a moving target because it happened so close to our deadlines for submitting legislation. There's a couple of issues out there. One is actually in bill form. We were able to get that before the deadline, which would require that any corporation spending money on behalf of any issuer candidate would have to show that 50% of their stockholders agree with that particular position. I think that makes sense. The other, and this right now is being floated simply as an amendment, we're looking for a bill to attach it to, would require that any corporation spending money through a political action committee would be required as part of their advertising to disclose if any corporation gave more than one-third of the money, the total monies, to that political action committee. In South Dakota, we do have registration requirements that would allow us to create a political action committee that had a title such as South Dakotans for Ice Cream and Puppy Dogs, and then have that be totally funded by a pharmaceutical company or something that has nothing to do with the particular issue. This would, I think, diminish some of the gamesmanship that we could see result from that. That's about as much of a detour as I think we can take. That's as long as we can think without coming right back to the budget. My friend Senator Heidebrim is right now pitching a bill that is pretty instrumental, I think, to the Democrat plan for long-term solution to the budget crisis we're in. He's pitching legislation right now that would limit future state budgets to an increase of 3% or the rate of inflation, whichever is less. This is the same requirements we put on our school boards, that we put on our city commissioners, or our county commissioners, rather, and we've done that for years. I think it just makes an awful lot of sense that we do the same requirements for our state. We've proposed this idea a number of times. It was part of a legislation I proposed in 2006. I think if we would have adopted that then, we would be in a much less severe financial crisis as we are now. Other legislation that the Democrats are proposing to look for more long-term solutions is to put a cap on any budget that we have to 98% of our projected revenues. Again, I think that creates some controls in making certain that we don't deficit spend. And some of these are short-term solutions. For instance, we have some legislation that would require the state to sell four of its fleet of airplanes. Four airplanes out of the fleet that we've acquired. We have more airplanes than any state our size. I'm not entirely certain how we got to this point, but I think it does make sense to sell off some of that property. So this is, I think, once again, when we look long-term, the Democratic Party's committed to focusing our attention on the budget, making certain that we have some long-term solutions, and I think that's evident with the legislation we've proposed.
Our student friends here today might be interested in knowing Senator Nesselhoff is running for Secretary of State, and thus he's been interested in campaign finance reform and in the elections process all through his tenure in the legislature, so it's only natural that he would be the leader in some of those bills.
That tenure, which started when I was not much older than you all.
But
yeah.
With that, we'd be happy to take some questions.
Senator Nesselhoff, you mentioned your bill in 2006 to put the cap on. Mm-hmm. The bill that Senator Heidefrem is introducing, are they exactly the same?
No.
What are the differences?
No, that was actually part of an education bill. That was would have capped the state at 3% and then allowed that captured money to be spent on education. So it was a two-part bill. One was to cap state spending. The other was to put more money into the schools. That was at the time when we were being when we were in the middle of the school lawsuit, where a study had come out showing we were underfunding our school districts by about $120 million a year. This was offered as a solution to that.
As we've talked about before, a vast majority of the states have some sort of spending cap, some sort of spending limitations in place, and we're one of the very few states that don't, and yet we consider ourselves to be a very practical, responsible, conservative people. I would like to think we are. So we need to do something in that regard. A spending cap like Senator Heidefrem and Senator Nesselhoff have advocated would clearly have put South Dakota in the black in this recessionary time. We would not have a structural deficit today if that had passed. And if they don't like that plan, then if our colleagues don't like that plan, then present another one. I think we're open to ideas. We just think that we need some kind of long-term spending policy.
Representative Hunhoff, I wanted to go back. You were talking about the FTEs, and yesterday on the floor, House Bill 1052. Mm-hmm. Is that a good idea with what they're trying to do with that, or what are your thoughts on that one?
No, I posted on the floor yesterday, and I applied the duck test. There was an old English poet who once said that if you're confused, and it seems like there is some confusion out here, if you're confused, apply the duck test. If it looks like a duck, swims like a duck, quacks like a duck, then it, in this case, it's an FTE, actually. It's we clearly need to need to have, if we can't even agree on how to count them, then we're going to have a really hard time agreeing on how to limit government growth. And I think really just some gamesmanship is going on out here right now. There's you know, obviously, nobody can really defend the growth of 1,400 FTEs. As I said, it's adding one employee every 48 hours over the last 7 or 8 years. I mean, it's just indefensible. Government has grown beyond the means of the public to afford it. And if we can't even agree on how to count the numbers, then we're really going to have a hard time fixing the system. I want to add, you know, all the FTEs that are actually showing up and doing work, I don't know about the phantom FTEs, I don't know what they do, but the FTEs that actually show up and are reporting for work are good people doing good things, and it's not like there are a lot of wasteful bureaucrats out there collecting paychecks. That's certainly not our belief. I think government just has a natural incentive to grow. Good people are attracted to government for public service, and they show up here, and they have lots of good ideas on how to serve the people of South Dakota. And many of them are in education or in protecting natural resources and law enforcement and corrections and all doing good work. But there has to be some limits on everything. There's only so much we can afford, and government has just grown beyond the ability of us to afford what we have.
How is the bill load right now? Does it seem like it's less than normal? Or
I have not heard an exact count, but I think it's slightly less than normal is my understanding. I've not heard the exact count.
It feels light. I don't know if that means that we're going to be working really hard here in a couple of weeks, but it feels like we're a little light on the year.
Questions from our students? We've answered everything you could possibly wonder about South Dakota state government, right? So. Dave, anything?
I already wrote about two of the issues yesterday.
So. Yeah, you covered them very well. Thank you.
The only thing I might ask Senator Nesselhoff, I know this morning they're continuing public testimony on the sex offender bills. Mm-hmm. What's gone through the Senate so far? If you could maybe touch on that for us.
Ooh, that's a good question. That's been not sitting on the Judiciary Committee. Is that going through the Judiciary mm-hmm. Committee or State Affairs? Well, not sitting on the committee. I haven't been part of that discussion other than on the floor. And frankly, there are so many bills as part of that package that I can't honestly tell you which have passed and which haven't. I do think as a whole, however, it's good to see that through the summer, it seemed that the committee came to a pretty definite conclusion that we did need to make some changes, and there were several components to that. And I'm frankly supportive of the fact that we are, I think, tightening up our sex offender registry to make certain that the worst offenders are accounted for, and that we are allowing some of the folks that maybe made a mistake when they were 18 at 10 or 15 years down the road, allow them to escape that. I think that makes sense. But I can't tell you specifically which proposals have already passed the Senate. I'm sorry, Stephanie.
There's a lot of theater out here, and I'm surprised that and on various issues, not on the budget so much. The budget's pretty boring and mundane, and you just plow your way through it. But there is a lot of theater out here, and I'm somewhat surprised that more South Dakotans don't come to appear in the wintertime when it's frigid and the ice streets are roads are icy, and can come out here and enjoy that. But one thing that's going on that everybody might want to pay attention to is the fight between our local car dealers in South Dakota and the big auto manufacturers. And it started on the House side, and there was really emotional and powerful testimony in the House of Representatives and State Affairs on how our local car dealers have really suffered at the hands of, in this case, specifically General Motors and Chrysler. When those companies filed bankruptcy, they took advantage of that bankruptcy protection to skirt state laws. Normally, states have the right to protect local car dealers, franchisees, like car dealers. And those state laws, were able to just skirt around them because they were in bankruptcy. And a whole lot of car dealers in South Dakota lost their franchises. Some of these dealers had been, dealers for that same company, for GM, for three or four generations, sometimes dating back, 60, 70, I think maybe even 80 years, long, long time. And it's really a powerful issue that really shows some of the stress that rural South Dakota is under. Now, on the House side, the bills really sailed through. These bills will not help the car dealers that have already suffered, but we're hoping that they might help future cases like this. There's some reforms on the franchise laws. The bill sailed through the House, I think, without a dissenting vote, which is really unusual, especially for an issue that's fairly controversial. It might be something those of you who enjoy the theater out here might want to watch for, because on the Senate side, I doubt it'll be quite that unanimous. It may or may not be, but I understand that the car dealers or the car manufacturers are sending in some pretty high-profile lobbyists to fight those reform bills that so far have just been sailing right along. So just an alert, something to watch for. Could get very interesting.
Senator Punhoff, on the House side, I know that's something that may be of interest to some of the students here in the room. Representative Tim Rounds is pushing a bill to create a new classification of alcoholic beverage establishments that would be open to people age 19 and 20 before age 21. I'm wondering what you think about that, and if the Democratic caucus has any position on that.
I don't think there'll be a caucus position, Dave, and myself. I'm just listening. I'd like to hear from young people on the issue. First of all, it's a complicated issue. Alcohol is a complicated topic anytime it shows up in the legislature. And obviously alcohol does a lot of harm, especially to young people who are maybe not mature enough for it. But I grew up in a time when 18-year-olds could drink, but they had 3-2 beer back then. And I'm not sure the alcohol abuse was any worse then than it is today. In fact, I know that by the time my children were in high school, you had to be 21. And I know for a fact, and I had two angels, obviously, for kids, but even beyond that, I know for a fact that at that time, kids were meeting in pastures or in homes where parents weren't there and things like that. So I'm not sure that was a great improvement. It might have been better off when they were going to clubs for teens. So I'm open. I'm open to it. There are some federal ramifications. We have to find out whether or not the federal government will allow us to, or whether they'll really come down hard on us and penalize us with transportation dollars if we would do something like that. I think it's a wonderful issue to talk about, and I'm not so sure it doesn't make some sense, but we've got to take everything into account. I would like to hear more from young people. I've not heard much, many comments or the views of the young people on this. My daughter studied, I'm not a big world traveler, but my daughter studied overseas, and we went over to visit her in Europe when she was over there, and she noted that, I think the laws are much more relaxed over there. And alcohol just does not seem to be a problem among the youth over there. So, maybe too many laws makes it, too alluring, perhaps, if you have too many laws or too many restrictions, and it's like the forbidden fruit. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on the subject, but I'm hoping to hear more about it.
I used to run into Bernie's kids at church social, so I can vouch for their angelic qualities.
I have a question. Do you feel that the budget problems are of limiting the creativity of the bills proposed, or do you think it's forcing the bills to be more creative?
That's an excellent question.
That's a very good question.
That's very good. Hire that one. That's an excellent question. I think it probably has limited the creativity, if you will, of some of the bills. It seems to be the first question that's asked anytime anyone proposes any piece of legislation this year is how much does it cost? And you have to get past that hurdle because if it's, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a few thousand dollars, which compared to our budget's a really minuscule amount, you have to get past that hurdle before you can even really realistically talk about an idea. I think that's maybe why we're a little light on bills this year, is I think people realized that the budget was going to dominate the conversation and that it was perhaps any bill that didn't that was going to take tension away from that or that wasn't going to be part of that conversation probably was on the back burner.
And that's exactly why we need a long-term spending policy, because that's the way it's been out here for a long time. Every session I've ever been involved with came down to that. You know, people would try to throw out some really positive ideas for the future, and then the powers that be would come in and say, oh, no, we're too broke for anything like that. They even said that in good times when revenues were twice the rate of inflation, and they spent all those revenues somehow or another. They just disappeared. The bureaucracy just grew, and we had nothing to show for it because all the really positive ideas for education, job creation, entrepreneurism, we're just shut it aside because we didn't have enough money. But still, we grew at twice the rate of inflation. It shows how bureaucracy is, what Senator Heidepreem says, just organic. That's why we need a long-term policy. And we can say nice things about Senator Heidepreem because he isn't here today. He's a really, really drilled that home to the Democratic caucuses that we absolutely need to get our fiscal house in order before we can do all the great things that we really want to do. You know, it's kind of like, in your own life, you know, if you can't balance your own checking account, you can't afford the utility bills, you can't do this and you can't do that, you certainly can't plan for a European vacation. And that's kind of where we're at. We don't want any European vacations on the state level. We just want good schools, you know, and we want to protect our environment and we want to create good jobs so our young people can stay here in South Dakota. We're not focusing on those things. If we want to, we've got to get our fiscal house in order first.
I sat in on, like, the Senate Transportation Committee yesterday morning, and there was a little proposed about, like, the road closings and stuff. Do you think then that the budget will, like, limit safety then? Because they wanted to, like, buy new blockages and stuff like that. Will that affect those like that then?
I wish I'd have heard that bill. People were talking about it at breakfast this morning, and there were some startling figures put out, as I understand, for what a gate costs on interstate highway. We're not setting priorities. We need to set priorities, and I would hope public safety would rank very high. But you're exactly right. I mean, when we can't even balance the checkbook, we can't even begin to set long-term priorities, and that's where we're at right here in Pierre. We're spending all our time just arguing about, you know, should we grab a little bit of money from this fund, or should we try to cut this tax a little bit or raise this tax, just all this little nitty-gritty stuff instead of looking at the long-term approach that legislators really should be tackling.
I think it's fair to say that this year everything's going to suffer, and that's every service the state offers, whether it's public safety or education or health care, because of the budget issues that we're dealing with. That's just the reality we're in.
Fortunately, we have the stimulus money, so specifically to road construction and road safety, I think we're very fortunate, and we can all complain about about the federal deficit, and we should all be worried about it, especially your generation. But the good news of that is that the federal stimulus money really bailed out South Dakota, especially in the transportation area.
Both of you have been around the legislature for a certain amount of time before this. I'm wondering if you guys could comment about that the party discipline this year in the Democrats. It seemed like there's a lot of votes for the Democrats are all voting in the block this year. I was wondering if you think that's happening more than usual this year or less, and if so, what's behind that?
Well, I think the Democrats are just taking things on their merit. We've not really had many discussions in caucus where we said, let's all vote. In fact, I don't think we've had a discussion in caucus where we said, let's all vote against this. I think it's a natural tendency for the minority to band together. They need to be united to make a difference, and there's nothing you even have to talk about. So that's kind of inside politics. I mean, the minority to be effective needs to be united. But I think the fiscal train wreck that the South Dakota state budget has suffered has united the Democrats. We realize, as we've said now, probably for the third time this morning, we realize if we don't show some leadership on the Democratic side and help to get our fiscal house in order and be responsible, we're never going to be able to really do all the good things we want to do for South Dakota.
I can tell you from the Senate side of things, the Senate caucus hasn't taken a caucus position on anything. That kind of goes against the way we operate. But occasionally we are all aligned on a particular issue. But I think that has more to do with our fundamental philosophy that unites us as Democrats as opposed to any sort of party structure. I don't think our whips are out there working too hard at whipping folks into line. I can tell you the only time we've actually counted noses even on a vote was yesterday on a rule change, which was only affected us as the Senate. We do have, of course, an open caucus, so I'd invite all of you students to come out, come on up and join us in caucus, and we invite anybody who's in the Capitol building who wants to just see the way a caucus runs to come up and see that.
We have time for one more question, if there is one. If not, we just really do thank you, Ann. Again, we can't stress enough how good it is to see young people in the Capitol. We don't have that nearly enough. It's probably too bad that Pierre is off in the middle of the state along in the depth of winter, and we just don't get enough visitors, young or old. But we certainly welcome you, and we'd appreciate input today or any time in the future. So thanks again. Thanks to public broadcasting. This opportunity really is helpful to democracy, and we appreciate it. Any closing words, Ben?
I think you covered it. Thank you all for being here.
Good enough.